from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. After winning her first election by a very, very narrow margin, Hannah Kelly served for 8 years in the Missouri House. Now the Republican from Wright County is hoping to navigate her way through a competitive GOP primary to represent Missouri's 16th senatorial district. Kelly joins us next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking, so let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
Let's go back to some of those policies, to that peace and prosperity that we had some 4 to 5 years ago.
Everywhere is Democrat country once this Democrat's been there.
There are a lot of things in Washington that are very bipartisan, including some bills that I've already gotten passed.
And I think it works best when you can see both sides, but you have to pick one, and I firmly align with the Republicans.
But certainly, I think if she's running against one of the crazy dudes, certainly it's going to be a lot easier.
But I'll take wisdom and age and a few missteps in oratory over somebody who has no substance.
I believe that you represent the party's values and you move forward, and that's what I have done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio's politics correspondent, Jason Rosenbaum. I am at the Richmond Heights Bureau of St. Louis Public Radio, and joining me from St. Louis Public Radio's Rolla Bureau, he is St. Louis Public Radio's Rolla correspondent,
Jonathan Ohl.
And joining us once again, she is one of three major candidates running for Missouri's 16th senatorial district. Our guest today is
Hannah Kelly.
Welcome back to the show. First time as a Senate candidate. I'm doing this for all the candidates, and I think that if you get this wrong, this is probably not good, but for people that don't know, what are the counties that make up the 16th district?
Wright, Laclede, Dent, Pulaski, Marys, and Phelps.
You've all three gotten that correct, so
we
that's
should.
Good, because you've been to all those counties by now. Mm-hmm. But just in case people are listening to these in a row, I want to just make sure that people understand which district we're talking about. So for people who have not heard your prior episodes of Politically Speaking before, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you were involved in Missouri politics, and why you decided to run for the Senate seat.
Yes. So I decided to run in 2016 for primary reasons that included the fact that I felt a great disconnect between my generation and those serving in politics, in the legislature in particular. And I began to realize and see that if someone didn't step up to start addressing what I was seeing as to be problems that included a lack of communication, a lack of accessibility, that if we didn't start to address these things, we were going to lose a generation of voters. And we were going to lose a generation of opportunity to have great impact on what the future of politics looks like. And so, you know, in addition to that, my family has always been in business for ourselves and in this, that, or the other ways. And in particular, one of the reasons that drove me to go ahead and file in 2016 was the fact that my brothers had a wood stove company. And that was on the tail end of the Obama administration. There was many issues, if you'll recall. I believe Eric Burleson passed something in regards to helping protect our right to burn wood. I believe that was Eric Burleson or Rick Bratton, maybe. And those were very impactful things for our little corner of the world when the EPA and the Obama administration was really coming hard at small businesses, and that included my family's business. I got my real estate license when I was 18, and I have been in real estate my entire adult life. From that professional experience, both now, then as an agent, now as a business owner with my sister Sarah of the brokerage, I find every single day the absolute imperative need that we always prioritize what we're doing to build the future for our families, what we're doing to make sure that people can plan long-term goals and dreams and visions for their families. Because if we don't have that as our focus, then we're shooting ourselves in the foot. And so my objective always at any table, but especially the table of public service, if given the chance to serve in the Senate, is to make sure that the families and the individuals from the 16th district know I have someone who will advocate for me. I have someone who will listen. I have someone who I can access. I have someone who will work together to figure out what we can do for the greater good of the people in this district. And my also something else I'm very passionate about is the Jeff City know the people that I serve. Anytime that lobbyists want to meet with me, I always make it a priority to ask them to come here. Because then my experience in the House was if somebody needed to meet with me, and I, one experience in particular, somebody said, Hannah, I need to talk to you about a policy they were advocating on behalf of. I said, well, you can talk to me, but you'll have to come to the local Amish restaurant. And we didn't talk much policy that day, but they met the people that I work for in the communities. And I believe that is so important because then when I am representing my people in Jefferson City, the perspective, they've walked the road with me, right? And they understand where my perspective is and why I'm asking for what I'm asking for in any given situation, because my priority is always the ability to make sure that the kitchen tables of my district have the opportunity to build a future and to make sure that that future is the best and brightest it can be, not just for our generation, but for the generations who hopefully after we're gone continue to make Southwest Missouri home.
So in a lot of your campaign messaging, one of the themes that comes up a lot is talking about reducing and eliminating wasteful government spending.
Yes.
What is Missouri spending money on that is wasteful right now?
The number one example that I would give to you, and there's many, and I'll do my best to keep this succinct. But one of the big issues that we face right now is making sure that the education dollars get to the classroom where the teachers and the students are. Making sure that we're not, money isn't getting lost in between that is best and most effectively spent in the classroom. I was with some bankers the other day in a local community, and they were talking about how for years they've helped to fundraise for classrooms. We were talking about this exact thing of making sure, you know, like, hey, we want to do everything we can to help our community. We are here for that. But more voice needs to be brought to the absolute fact that the waste has to constantly be addressed. And I'm going to liken it to this. At both your and my kitchen tables, I'm going to presume that you're like me and you have to constantly address your budget, right?
Yes.
It's not a magic thing where you arrive and all of a sudden everything works every week and every month and every year and every quarter and it all always works out. Like, you don't just arrive and then never have to look at it again. And I think that's where the boat often gets missed. It takes constant oversight, constant watching, constant communication. Just the same way that it does for us at our kitchen tables. And that's the kind of approach that I have taken for 7 years on the Budget Committee in the State House of Representatives. That's the kind of approach I will take on behalf of the people of the 16th Senate District if given the chance to serve. But I would say the example of the education dollars, as well as making sure, you know, we could go down a long list of things, but some other things that are coming to me is redundancy within our departments. It is so important to address any areas where money is being spent for duplicative services, where money is being spent with no outcome. And that is a systematic problem statewide that constantly has to be looked at the same way, you know, when you and I go to our kitchen table, we constantly have to make sure, oh, hey, you know what, last week we spent too much money at Walmart, and this week we have to reprioritize and make sure we're not spending, you know, we're not $200 off the budget or whatever the number is. That kind of approach constantly has to be kept with the state budget.
I think the difference, though, is that in my household budget, if we're doing a little bit better than we expected, mm-hmm. we don't return any of the money back to our employer. I don't say St. Louis Public Radio, I spent $100 less than I needed to, so I'm going to give that money back mm-hmm. to you. And and that's where I think the analogy kind of breaks down, because if I understand correctly, mm-hmm. in your position, if the state doesn't spend all of that money, they should give that money back to the taxpayers. So I don't give any of my money back to my employer when I'm doing well. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide those kinds of things? Because at our kitchen table, we may get pizza for dinner tonight mm-hmm. instead of cooking something that's in the freezer.
Yeah.
But state government may feel like you don't ever want to spend money on pizza. You need to cook what's in the freezer.
Yeah. So I would digress and say, what's your question?
Well, I guess I'm just, those analogies mm-hmm. of, you know, we need to run government the way we run our house budget. There are some fundamental differences in the way you run your house budget compared to the way a state government should. That does the analogy really work?
The analogy works in my humble opinion. I mean, analogies are analogies. Do they ever work in full sure. completeness? I have yet to find one that perfectly fits any situation out of no disrespect.
No problem.
But what I would say to that is the thing that comes to my mind is, you know, when I first got on the budget committee with Scott Fitzpatrick, there was a rainy day fund. You and I need to have rainy day funds. I haven't always had one, but we need to have them, right? I think we could all agree on that. And so the reason why I apply that analogy is because the basic structure of the train of thought, you know, is always, I believe, applicable. It's where we run into a lot of problems with both county budgets and the state budget. Pardon me. Oh my gosh. The fact that during COVID, we had a lot of money come in. We had a lot of repeatable expenses created that we didn't have the balancing piece on the other side of the budget to continue to perform for. And now the proverbial chickens have come home to roost. And now we have to deal with that. I understand what you are saying, that there can you can break down any analogy. Mm-hmm. You can make any, just as much as I can sales pitch you on why my analogy works, I also understand why you can easily point holes in my analogy. But the fact remains that we have to have constant accountability and communication both within the branches of government, but also back home to the people. And also take the basic steps of making sure that we do have rainy day funds. Take the basic steps of accountability. I was visiting with some folks at a foster care resource office today, to put it that way. They were telling me about a grandmother that has taken in 6 grandchildren. And the bio parents are still taking all of the state help for the children. Now, analogies aside, that's wrong. That is 110% wrong. And Jason knows I get all mama bear on this stuff, because that, when you say, Hannah, how do you want to cut waste? How do you want to address what's happening with the taxpayer dollars? We have to get real about what is happening within our departments. And when I say that, examples like that is what I mean. Because this particular case in point, not only is the bio parent still receiving all the benefits for the children they are not raising, those benefits, to my understanding from the conversation today, included WIC and SNAP. And they're taking it all while the kids are not in the house. Those are the things that I hope to get to deep dive into, because here's what I know. My daughter, and I speak this with her full permission to say, she came to my house when she was 17. 2 weeks into being at my house, we were standing there making sandwiches at the kitchen cabinet like any mom and daughter might do. And she was getting ready to go to school, and she said, thank you for always making sure we have food. And she, unbeknownst to me, had lived 2 towns from me almost her entire life and had dumpster dove more than she had not. And that is not okay. That is not okay. And my goal is to make sure that those who need a hand up have it, and that we're not in the business of giving handouts to people who don't cherish and value the lives they have created.
Let me go back to the education example, too. Mm-hmm. So let's say Rolla High School is about a mile away from where we are at the moment. Let's say mm-hmm. we go there. What are some examples of what Rolla High School might be spending that of their state appropriation that isn't the classroom? I'm just trying to get an idea of some of those examples.
So thank you for that question. Mm-hmm. And what I would say to that is 2 things. How we best address that is by, I'm going to use my business world and analogies here. The best way to address that is by sitting down and understanding where they're at, right? When I have an agent in my office that has a goal to meet, I don't just throw answers to them. I sit down first and I get a real world understanding of the immediate needs in front of them. Okay. And I have a basic understanding of that, but I will tell you one of my goals if elected to serve is to immediately begin taking meetings with our educators, taking meetings with our healthcare professionals, asking for the chance to walk alongside them. I can't think of the number of my agents right now off the top of my head, but I meet with them weekly because their needs change weekly. Sometimes that meeting isn't in person. Sometimes that's over the phone. But do you see what I'm saying? When I say, you know, yes, I have the basic construct of what I think the issues might be. But just as I wouldn't ever dare to presume that I have an immediate understanding without a renewed meeting of today. You know, I have one agent in particular. I need to call him before the end of today and say, hey, did anything change in this situation? My goal as state senator is to have that kind of communication to understand best what needs to be done as we move forward. The basic construct is to make sure that we do not have duplicative services within the administration of any school in the state of Missouri, to make sure that we are not overspending in any. I don't care what it is. There's a situation I'm thinking of back a number of years ago. An excessive amount of cookie purchases were found in the state budget. I think to the tune of like $10,000 or something.
Cookies? Like literal cookies?
Cookies. This is according to my Uncle Van, who served in the early 2000s. And he found this budget line where, and he's like, what is this? Right? And they said, well, that's cookies. Like for events, for whatever. And this was a department, and I can't think of which department it was now, but this was a department that at the time was really in dire need of some accountability and communication and outcome that was better than where they were at. And as the story goes that he tells, he said, well, I think that we could all just volunteer to make cookies and bring them, and won't we just knock this out? That's what I'm talking about. It's the devil is in the details, right? And so your question to me is, what can they cut? My answer to you is going to be...
I actually didn't say what they could cut. That was not my question. Yeah. My question is, what are they spending money on? Because you said you want to make sure that the state money is going to the classroom.
Mm-hmm. The education dollars, yes, intended for the, yes, for the students.
And
yes.
So my
mm-hmm.
question is, what might that school, or any school, I'm not mm-hmm. specifically asking yeah. you, but what might any school be spending state dollars on that isn't,
I think it's going to vary from institution to institution, and that's why one of the things I really value is what Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick is doing right now. Mm-hmm. He's going school district to school district and making sure that those accountability conversations are being had, so that hopefully if I have the chance to serve you in the state Senate, I'm going to be reviewing those documents. I have already done a little review, but honestly, I'm very busy on the campaign trail haven't had time for a full review. But to answer your question, the answer, I believe, is an evolving answer, right? Mm-hmm. Because it depends on the day, just as it does within our places of business and at our kitchen tables. It depends on the day and the needs of the day and the fires at the front of the stove. Right. I know I was visiting with an education professional the other day who's been closely monitoring the conversations that are happening with the funding. Right. And I'm drawing a blank on the committee name. You might know what I'm talking about. There's a committee that's currently in place that's discussing the foundation formula, and I cannot think of the name, but I'm trusting.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a gubernatorial committee that is yes. reviewing the foundation formula. Do I know the exact name of that?
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I would blank out on it too. So yeah. You're not going to get a demerit for that, but continue.
Thank you. Well, to come back to your question, the answer is communication. The answer is accountability. And the answer is not being afraid of the hard conversations. My understanding from the campaign trail is that there is much bloat within administration in different situations across the state. I am not talking about specifically, you know, I'm talking from a state perspective, that it is my absolute and firm belief that if I'm serving as your senator, if there's situations brought to my attention to where there is excessive waste and misuse of taxpayer dollar within any administration of any school or any government entity, then that needs to be addressed. We need to make sure that in those situations that we are doing what's right on all levels of government and all levels of service to the people, make sure that we are taking care of our kids. I think we could all agree that if any education money is being misused in the administration, and we have education professionals who are not empowered and equipped to go serve our children, who we hope is our next prepared workforce, then you and I have a problem. Because that means that our future isn't the best and brightest it can be when those issues arise. And that's why I want to work together to tackle those issues. There's a superintendent within the district who I won't name out of respect, but we have had some really great conversations about these things. And he said, hey, if you do win, you call me the day after and let's sit down and let's have these conversations and get down to the nitty gritty from a perspective standpoint, from a perspective of what's working and what's not working, that is currently real time. And that's how you get things done, whether it's education, whether that's here back home at my real estate office or in the state Senate.
So I want to talk about video lottery terminals, because I think a big issue in this. I said this on a previous show. I have a weird value system when it comes to gambling, in that I think most gambling is horrible and pernicious, except for fantasy football, which I think is fun and acceptable. So that just shows that, like, I'm not consistent on this. So when I look at this issue of video lottery terminals, one part of my mind is having these machines in gas stations and convenience stores is going to exacerbate gambling addiction. But then I'm also like, the reason why there's so much energy against these is because casinos see these as competition. And casinos are not exactly helpful in terms of reducing gambling addiction either.
No, they're not.
I've seen your videos. I've seen your videos. You're anti VLTs.
Correct.
But how do you like thread the reality that this just seems to be a proxy war between the VLT companies and the casinos, and it's not really about getting rid of gambling or dealing with the pernicious consequences of it?
Great question. I can only speak for myself. I put out an initial video. I don't know if you saw it. I do not blame you if you didn't see it or if you totally forgot about it. But there was an initial video back last fall that I put out, and it talked about how there's a time and a place, and that I do not want these machines in our gas stations easily accessible to our children. I made that video about the illegal slot machines of my own accord, and just genuinely caring about what you just exactly said much better than I can, about the fact that addiction is real and the accessibility to it is not productive for the next generations. And so obviously, again, well stated, there is a, you know, casinos don't want these machines, and they happen to agree with the same outcome that I want. It just also so happens that I wanted this outcome long before they ever came into the conversation of the 16th district, because I'm going to tell you why. I was out putting up signs the other day, and this lady, she wanted me to put a sign in her yard. She said, Hannah, she said, I want to tell you, don't stop fighting these things. And I said, well, why? I mean, I know why, but I wanted to hear her why. She said, before I got saved in jail, she had dealt drugs at those machines. She said, if any of those machines were going right now, she said, I can take you to the stations and I could tell you what to test for. Why? Because I used to deal the drugs. And she said, by God's grace, that is not my life now. My life is completely different. But she said, these machines bring nothing but negative consequences, not just to the community around it, but also to the individual lives. Now, those who support the machines for financial reasons to help, air quotes, pay the bills for the state, I'm already on record on how I feel about that. And, you know, that's like saying, I mean, I've said it, so I'll say it again. If it's okay to legalize these machines to pay for our state's bills, then that's like saying it's okay to prostitute your child to pay your light bill. It's not. It's not. The concept is wrong. It is not in the best interest of the next generation. And that is what leadership, I believe, of this generation has to be about. And so the conversation then turns back in full force to, well, we have budget issues coming up. How do we deal? How do we address?
Also, the other, and just to interrupt, then the conversation goes, like, you could may say the same thing about casinos, and I'm sure that there's better
security
in casinos.
I don't disagree.
Casinos, and I'm sure they're not dealing drugs in there.
I'm not taking up for casinos.
Yeah, I understand, but to be fair, the thing that you alluded to is, and I understand you don't control your PAC, and PACs are separate, but a PAC that is supporting you has gotten a lot of money from casinos.
Yes.
Because I think that they like your VLT stance. And yeah. I'm just trying to point out that, like, casinos are not innocent bystanders here.
Never said they were.
They do not want competition from these things. And people that say, oh, they're not real competition, they are. Otherwise, like, people wouldn't be going to these things because there's only 13 casinos in the country, in the state. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but
no,
I do need to point those things out for
Absolutely.
Context.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100%. I could care less about the why that casinos agreed with me. I believe, as someone who's asking to be the state senator for this district, that I have to know my own why, and my own why cannot be influenced by outside people. I have no control over that PAC whatsoever. I absolutely could not agree with you more. Casinos are not, again, I use the word, they're not a Mother Teresa in this conversation. They are not. They still provide gambling. They still cause, the addiction issues are real within the world of any gambling setup. But here's what I can tell you. They are a currently legal form of gambling, and these machines are not. And here's what also I can tell you. I'm pretty sure, on an estimated level, that the owners of these illegal slot machines from Illinois have about hit $1 million mark campaigning against me. So the conversation comes full circle, because I never once have said that casinos are Mother Teresa's, because they're not. Everyone at this table want certain outcomes for different reasons. I know that I want that young lady that talked to me the other day to be able to overcome her addiction and to be able to continue helping people who are rehabbing from different various addictions, as she's doing now that her life is on a better track, without getting a setback because these machines got legalized. Because at the end of the day, when you really get down to the punches of it, it's all about the money. It's all about the money. And I understand that, because I was not born yesterday. But what I will tell you is, we will live to regret the day that we say it's okay to move forward legalizing these to pay the bills. And if I am at this table, I will not let it happen.
We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue our politically speaking conversation with Hannah Kelly. And we're back on Politically Speaking with former State Representative Hannah Kelly. She is one of three major Republican candidates in the 16th District Senatorial Contest. Jonathan, I'm going to throw the questioning back to you.
So one of the things that is top of mind for a lot of people is data centers.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long ago, Governor Kehoe had his statewide symposium on data centers and AI right here in Rolla,
mm-hmm.
where it was a very friendly crowd. A lot of people were very, very interested in this. The mm-hmm. governor's position is pretty strong that he wants to make it possible for data centers to locate in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time when we have a lot of people in a room talking about data centers, it's the exact opposite. They're very angry. They're very upset.
Right.
What role do you think the state should have on data centers in either making it harder for them to come here or making it easier for them to come here?
So there is a whole lot that all of us don't know. I think we would agree on that. This is, what is the term, the wild, wild west right now. That's probably what scares me the most, right? We have a lot to learn. I have a lot to learn. My concern is understanding two things. If I look you in the eye and I tell you that I can make data centers go away, I'm lying to you. Because I haven't found a way to do that yet, and the facts are that they are in this state. My commitment, if trusted to be the next state senator, is that when we are at that table, I will fight every day with other people who I know feel the same way to make sure that the 16th district, we do everything we can to protect our people, to protect our resources, and keep the data centers out. And why? It's multifaceted. I've been in real estate for 20 years. We have some of the best land. We have some of the best water here. And whether a person understands this or not, it is my absolute belief on my professional background and knowledge that other parts of the country are losing that. And I, for one, do not and will not stand by silently and allow our resources, which also include the health of our people, to be harmed. Now, we preface this conversation with, we have a lot to learn. We may get to a day where we see that the concerns aren't valid that are on the table. But as I see it right now, those are my top concerns. I see no good coming from them being here. Because, in addition, you have to understand, I come from a farming background. Missouri has always been able to help feed the world. The 16th District has always been able to help feed the world. My brother right now is out sweating, running cattle, making sure they're fine, taking care of them, making sure that the beef that gets on your table is good and the best, right? We cannot and must not, and so are thousands of other farmers across the district. We cannot and must not harm the ability to provide that in the name of bringing a data center in. You lose your water, you lose everything. You literally lose everything. My family is, I believe, seventh generation to this area. History tells us, you lose your water, you're done. You're done. And I do not want to see that happen on my watch.
I'm so glad that you have such an extensive farm background, because there is a little bit of a precedent in these kind of situations. And I'm thinking about certain livestock raising operations, CAFOs, and the state stepped in, overrode what local counties could do on regulating them, and said, the state knows better than the county. And the state is now going to tell you that these are the rules statewide. And there are certainly people who think those CAFO rules are reasonable, and there are certainly people who think they're unreasonable. And so just looking at recent history, we have an example where the state said, we know better, we're going to make these decisions for you. Are you concerned that could happen again with data centers?
So two things. There should always be a concern of keeping government in check. And I feel like you and I could probably agree on that, maybe for different reasons, but keeping government in check is always a good thing. And I'm hearing you say that you're seeing a overreach of different levels of government.
Some people would say that. I'm not. I'm
right. Just, you're like yeah. some these yeah. concerns would be expressed. On August 5th, if I'm the Republican nominee for state Senate for the 16th district, one of many to-do things that I'm going to immediately be diving into is, what are the counties saying? Breaking it all down, really going over that, and taking a renewed approach to, there's some counties that haven't made any moves, and there's some counties that have. And then comparing apples to oranges and oranges to apples, right? And seeing what the language is looking like across the counties and what, you know, the proverbial word from the people is in an official matter, in an official way, when it comes to this conversation. I can't tell you what the answer is, and I'm not going to, you'll learn that about me if you haven't already. Like, if I don't know, I'm not going to make it up. And we will learn and work through it together, but I will tell you unequivocally, I'm already on record for saying I don't want him in the 16th district.
So you were not in the legislature when the General Assembly put Amendment 4 on the ballot. You've been out of the legislature because of term limits.
Correct.
I know you have supported other iterations of making it harder to amend the Constitution in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But they and they were just much less restrictive than this. It was either like five out of eight congressional districts, mm-hmm. or 60% or 57%. 8 out of 8 seems really extreme.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna be honest. So what's your thought about it? Because this seems to be dividing Republicans more than I thought, given that a lot of Republicans in Missouri believe that there should be changes to the initial petition process, but don't really feel that this is the answer. So where do you fall on the continuum?
I fall on the side that I'm voting yes on Amendment 4. And the reason I'm voting yes on Amendment 4 comes from my extensive time in the House and the fact that I have dealt with issues that I hold very close to my heart and a majority of people in my district hold very close to their heart in regards to the fact that our Constitution has got blown out of the water. Okay. I am not voting yes on 4 saying that 4 is perfect at all. This is a line in the sand issue for me. Our Constitution, I mean, we could sit here and have a whole episode about what's went, could we not? I mean, if I wanted to go put my dog in the Constitution today, it wouldn't be that hard to do. Am I wrong?
Yes, no, I'm going to push back against you on that, because that often gets explained by Republicans. It would require you to have millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. It would require you to get a lot of signatures in 6 out of 8 congressional districts, and you would have to run an effective proponency campaign and hope that there's no opposition campaign, because if there's an opposition campaign, the chances of it losing go way up. So, no, I respectfully disagree with you.
Fair pushback. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm a yes on 4 because I have sworn to uphold the Constitution previously in the House of Representatives. I hope to have the privilege to do that in the Senate. The Constitution is a document that we have to protect for future generations. And if we continue to bring things to the Constitution when you have, I understand your pushback, but the reality is that there's been a whole lot of stuff pushed through the Constitution while that people, I don't count anymore, the amount of people that come to me and say, what in the world, what does this mean? I don't have time to figure this out. The whole process needs worked on. Now, to your point, I have supported things in the past. I am supporting Amendment 4. I am not telling you that I'm supporting it saying it's perfect, because it's not. I can tell you different ways and, you know, that I think it could be better. I don't feel like now's the time for that. The ultimate takeaway for me is I believe that we have to take the approach that I view our founding fathers intended, if you look at the reflection of the federal Constitution, that this document shouldn't be thrown around like a tetherball. It needs to be protected, and the process needs to be such that it should be very difficult. Now, I'm going to sidestep that with the fact that I'm running for the 16th district. It has 6 counties in it. And saying that, you know, I get your pushback, but I'm running for office. I got to go to the people. I have got to win the hearts and the minds of the people across this district, or it doesn't work. And I believe, and it's hard work, and I believe that that challenge should be there. I believe that people should work. If people in St. Louis and Kansas City want an issue on the ballot, they should come to Rolla, Missouri, and work just as hard. I believe that.
Yeah. I do understand that point, because the 8th district is one that often does not get gathered. They don't gather signatures there. No. That is absolutely true. Continue.
Again, to the point, we could piecemeal like into the language of it, and we could probably agree where things could be better. But this is a ride or die issue for me, because, you know, I went to the Supreme Court on the last version of Amendment 3. Yeah. And I have very strong opinions about what the last version of Amendment 3 was. And it went into our Constitution. And here we are today, and I'm for it. So
let's say 4 passes.
Uh-huh.
and then three fails in November.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that after that,
mm-hmm.
if, and I know how important that issue is to you.
Right.
That means for you to get that through in the future,
mm-hmm.
you would have to convince Kansas City and St. Louis to vote for the mm-hmm. for another shot at Amendment mm-hmm. 3. Would you be comfortable?
Jonathan, I need to interrupt. Mm-hmm. If it is done through the initiative petition process,
yes.
if it is put on the ballot through the legislature, it's mm-hmm. still a majority of the vote, which is another criticism of this, that there's two, it's a two-tiered system that has one mm-hmm. side for initiative petitions and one side for the legislature.
I'm just trying to gauge, do you feel so strongly about four that even if it meant it led to you not getting something that you really wanted mm-hmm. morally, spiritually,
mm-hmm.
in your mind and heart, wanted in the Constitution, is that a fair trade-off to you?
Yes, I'm going to tell you why. You painted the hypothetical of if it passed,
mm-hmm.
Amendment 4 passed, and then Amendment 3 failed.
Yes.
Okay. I will tell you right now, with many witnesses in the audience, right? Jason included, that I would do whatever I had to do and go do the work. I will change whatever I've got to change about my day-to-day habits and my travel and my commitments to go do the work to help achieve the outcome because I care that much about it. I would literally give up whatever I had to give up to go make sure that we knew we did everything we could. In companionship to the fact that there are some very concerning social issues. We could name a million things that honestly I believe are impending coming down the pipeline of the ballot. Okay. And at some point, again, I know me and my terms and my examples, but you have to draw the line in the sand. You have to decide that you're going to protect what you've got. And I believe this is the way we do it.
Before I ask like a more specific question on 5, are you voting yes or no on 5?
I'm voting no on 5.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have had we've interviewed the two other candidates, Bill Hardwick mm-hmm. and Don Mayhew. Both of them have told us that when they go to the doors, the hostility toward 5 from residents mm-hmm. of counties that voted anywhere from 71% to 87% for Donald Trump mm-hmm. is so high. They are not sure that it will get 40% of the vote in the 16th district.
I don't think it
will. You experiencing that too?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How in the world was this issue screwed up that badly?
Well,
because this should not be failing to get 40%.
This is not me trying to be mean, girl.
Yeah.
But my opponents, one voted yes and the other wasn't there.
That's true. And we mm-hmm. asked them both about that. Continue. Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Why do you think this is so unpopular?
I will tell you my opinion. My opinion is people are dealing with lots of expenses. Okay. We all are in different ways. And I'm going to boil it down to this. When life feels chaotic, what do we like? We like a plan. We like a plan. My life is chaotic right now. I literally lose all the money on my little farm that I would ever make in the next 6 months because I pay my nieces and nephews to go do the chores, right? I have people that mow the lawn for me, all the things, you know, because I'm busy on the campaign trail. I like to have a plan, though, to get through the chaos, right? Amendment 5 does not have a clear plan. And I think that's why the angst is there. I know that that is why I'm voting no.
Well, thank you very much for being on our show yet again.
Yeah, it's my privilege.
And for all of our stories.
I hope you'll have me back on soon.
If you win, you get to be on as many as 8 more times. So, Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri system. And representative, I'll still call mm-hmm. you representative because mm-hmm. even though you're not in it, where can people find out more about your campaign on the internet?
HannahKellyForSenate.com and also Hannah Kelly for Senate on Facebook.
Thank you very much. Until then, so long.
Thank you, sir.
Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.